Hobbies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Leslie Williams, Brian Lloyd and Fionnuala Jones. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
So unusual wines today, Leslie. Yes. We're going to the Caucasus.
Ancient wines. I mean, these are the oldest. The oldest wine-making facility yet to be discovered is in Armenia.
Yeah.
And the Georgians would say, oh, we have those, just haven't found them yet. But because there is evidence that wine was made in both Georgia and Armenia 6,000 years ago.
And they would bury it, wouldn't they?
They still do that. And they still do that in some of the older wineries in Georgia. They've adopted that in Armenia. Armenia is a little younger in terms of modern production. But yet, Kvirvi is the name of it, which is an amphora that you bury in the ground and constant temperature. And that's why the grapes were just sort of dumped in, basically, and left to macerate. And that's why we have orange wine from there, because the white grapes would macerate and they would come out an orange colour. And so they never lost the orange wine tradition, whereas that had to be sort of reinvented again in the 90s in the rest of Europe. But Armenia always had that tradition as well, but it was lesser. During Soviet times, they made more brandy, and they still make amazing brandy, actually, and you can get some Armenian brandy in Ireland. But I was in Armenia for a week, I'll tell you about a bit. Will I talk about this now?
Or we'll talk about it shortly. Disclosure Day. Mm-hmm. Weird thing.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, you know, they brought a little select group of American critics to go and see the film.
They
were all raving about
it.
And you would have thought, like, 12 Oscar nominations the way they were going on. But it seems as if, since the film was released, from the reviews I've read, it's been, it's okay kind of reviews rather than it's a masterpiece.
It's been a lot of, like Robbie Collin in The Telegraph, I think, only gave it 2 stars. Now, Peter Bradshaw in The Guardian, usually they would be kind of more or less on target, as in, they'd kind of agree with one another. Very, very different views. Donald Clark in The Irish Times, I think he gave it 3.5.
Yeah.
I was not jazzed on it, I gotta say. And maybe this is the thing of, like, I went into it with very, very high expectations. You know, Spielberg doing Aliens again and stuff like that. David Koepp, great cast. All of that going on. Can I do a little bit of a quick straw poll here?
Yeah.
Do you believe in aliens?
No.
No,
no, I don't mean believe in aliens in their little green people.
I mean, do you believe in
there?
The existence of alien life in our universe?
It's almost certainly true.
It is, isn't it? How about you?
Yeah. 100%.
The idea that there is life.
Do we believe that there is extraterrestrial life?
This is a good chance, given how many billions of stars there is.
Yeah, but there is the Drake equation, which figures out, how remote the possibility is, and the other
Fermi
thing.
Fermi paradox.
The Fermi paradox. Why haven't we heard from them?
Some well-known physicists believe that we may actually be the only one.
Carl Sagan, whole idea of, the law of big numbers states that if there are so many planets in the solar system, or in our universe, there must be carbon-based life forms that have some sort of thing.
Yeah.
You would think.
Yeah.
And then there's the dark forest theory, and then there is the great filter theory, and there's all these theories about why aliens haven't contacted us. The point I'm asking is that the film, the part of it that may be really incredulous is not the fact that there are aliens have been here since Roswell and so on and so forth. The part that I found incredulous was that it's some sort of like controversial opinion to believe that aliens still exist, and that's what a good chunk of the film is,
and
like,
that's,
you know,
the premise that we'll all panic and
we'll
freak
all
out.
Panic in that, like, you know, they've been keeping it quiet for so long because, you know, humans can't process. So I'm like, no, I mean, I think people would.
But
it's not a controversial
opinion. That's quite
opinion.
An old trope, though,
it
isn't
is
it?
Very
keeping
old.
It secret because people would freak out.
Yes, and I mean, like, in the world of he's an alien.
Yeah.
That
was actually something in Klingon.
He was the smoking man from, like, you don't even smoke, but the smoking man from X-Men. No, but like, that's it. It's not a controversial opinion to believe that aliens exist and all the rest of it. Like, I think any logical, rational person would look at it and say, yeah, it's a possibility and stuff. Yet the film wants us to believe, no, they've been keeping it secret for so long. And, you know, we've got to keep this, and the truth has to get out there and stuff. And I'm like, I think we're beyond that now, so
And Scary Movie pants,
I cannot wait to put my studs in.
Okay, right.
Wow.
This is a remake. There was, like, why did
it's a whole thing.
Is it a pants remake of a film that wasn't that great to begin
with? They call it a reboot equal, which is like they brought back the original cast and then got new people in, and it's just awful.
Oh,
awful.
Good. Really looking forward to that. So Doctor Who, is Doctor Who kind of a bit doomed given that, you know, Russell T. Davis kind of reanimate it?
Yeah, seems to be. So it's out to tender, out to pasture. The BBC have scrapped it. I think there was thoughts that there was going to be another Christmas special, but not happening.
It's a big deal in England, actually.
Huge, like absolutely huge. Now, I will say the ratings have been flagging. The last Doctor was Shuti Gatwa, who people would know probably best from Sex Education on Netflix. But yeah, just seems to have been, I think that was like the worst kind of viewed in the history of the entire show, whatever. It's been kind of a complicated journey for the show because Disney Plus were involved with the streaming rights, which was limited.
I thought they were putting money into it. Like, I thought the whole thing was going to be all big budget with Disney behind it and
it
stuff.
It seemed like it, yeah, but then that happened earlier this year and then this has happened now. So, as I said, it's gone out to tender and Russell T. Davis is gone, as is his production company, Bad Wolf. Now, the BBC have said in a statement that Doctor Who remains an important part of the BBC. There's an animated series with CBeebies still in production, and I think they're kind of hoping for something from this tender. But it was just interesting because, and like if you're a Doctor Who fan, you know this, and you kind of hinted to it there about this reanimation when the Doctor regenerates, for anyone that's not familiar, and there's a different actor kind of per series or per couple of series. And despite the kind of flagging viewership, shall we say, at the end of this most recent series, the Doctor regenerated into none other than Billy Piper, who was a former love interest of...
She was a companion,
part of like the whole kind of rebooted era with Christopher Eccleston and then David Tennant and stuff like that. So people were kind of a bit gagged, you know, that she was coming back and she was going to be the Doctor, etc, etc. But Russell T. Davis, in his statement in which he's like, I'm very excited, it's going to be very exciting, what will they change, etc, etc, also goes on to essentially be like, because people were like, oh, so if there was no plan, why did you make her the Doctor? And he essentially admitted to it in his Instagram statement. He said, for the record, or the Christmas special, he said, for the record, there was no script. I never wrote it. And no actor was ever approached to play the next Doctor. You may disagree. Fine. Sit in that chair and wait to be proved right. You'll wait a long time. So what were you bringing in Billy Piper for? Wasting her time and wasting everyone else's time who was like, oh my God, Rose Tyler's back. Like, I'm not even in the fandom and I'm annoyed for them. Like, that's just playing in their faces.
Yeah.
Like.
Why is he leaving it though?
I don't think we know the full story behind that. Now, again, this is me looking from the outside in, and maybe this is not reflective of the whole fandom.
Oh, no, go on,
I think there seemed to be some general consensus that people weren't happy with Russell T. Davis. I know Christopher Eccleston himself had been like very vocal in.
He had serious beef with him.
That I don't fully understand.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a creative differences thing, if it was a, okay, well, nobody's watching it, so we need to try something.
We need something else, yeah.
We need something else, etc. No, like, he's too busy. He's obviously just done that.
But they seem to have left it a bit late to put this out to tender. You'd think they would have had this.
There's not going to be, as I said, there's not going to be a Christmas special.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, like, get that out of your head.
Yeah.
I'd say they probably want Netflix or somebody to buy it up, like, and start doing it.
Gosh.
I just don't know why they couldn't figure it out with Disney when Disney was already kind of involved. And Disney is
Seems
not
strange.
Short of a few bob.
Yeah, strange. Yeah, very, very strange.
It is an odd one. Right, and so the Obsession merch. Now, I think we were talking about this before, weren't we? This kind of wishy stick or whatever you call it.
Obsession for, this is reviewed on the show, right? I actually still haven't seen it, but this makes me like, I need to see it now because it's been this kind of independent phenomenon. I know, I will see it, it's on my list. It's still in cinemas if you're the same as me, but if you're unfamiliar, and this is no spoilers, it basically focuses on this music store employee. His name is Bear. He's a hopeless romantic. He's fallen in love with his co-worker named Nikki. He tries to win her over through using this like novelty item. It's called a One Wish Willow, and he drops her off at home. He breaks the One Wish Willow, makes the wish that she will be in love with him kind of more than he loves her, and it has disastrous consequences, needless to say. I don't think that's a spoiler for the film. People are obsessed with these One Wish Willows. Like, they're buying them in absolute spades. So Focus Features is the studio behind the film, and they cannot keep the sticks in stock. Now, again, cannot stress enough,
It's not real.
It doesn't grant wishes. This store goes to great lengths to say as much. But it is also a stick you break in half for $7. They cannot keep the things on the shelves, to the point where people are reselling them on eBay. There's one up at the minute for $600.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
Is it actually from a willow, or it's probably made in a factory
like
in China?
It's like a little bamboo shoot or something.
It's
I have a magic willow. thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's I explain, like, because I lie on the couch at home often, right?
Okay.
And the door is behind me.
Okay.
The cat is constantly opening the door, and it doesn't close very well, and she knows how to open the door. And so I have this long piece of willow that I took from a forest when I was mushroom hunting a few years ago. And I can use it to basically close the door without having to get off the couch. It's extremely useful.
Okay. Is it a good back scratcher? As
you can use it for that.
I was going to say.
Would it not scratch the paint on your door?
Remote, you can knock it on the ground. And put, pardon?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's light piece of wood. It's really, willow is actually quite a light piece of wood.
Yeah.
So it's really
that sounds,
useful.
I don't know why, but I just thought Homer Simpson. It's the sort of thing Homer Simpson would have
got. I lost myself with a rag on a stick.
Okay, tell us about our first wine, Les.
So, our first wine is a producer called Zorah, Z-O-R-A-H, and it is from the Areni region of Armenia, A-R-E-N-I, which is in the mountains, best known wine region.
Brian, have us over that glass there.
Oh, sorry, yeah, please, sorry.
Areni Noir is the grape, and what the nice bit about this wine is that it's from the region where we have found the oldest wine production facility ever, which is from about 3,900 years before the Christian era.
Yeah.
So lovely, dark, bright fruit, sort of blackcurrant, but not too heavy. I mean, there's an elegance there, but a minerality. I was in Armenia for a week, and they've just elected a new government, as we were possibly hearing on the news, which is good. They're moving back towards Europe, as away from the Russian influence. And this is good because it felt like a very European city. I was drinking glasses of orange wine in cool wine bars. I was wandering around the city. Slightly Soviet look to the architecture, but nicely done, with lots of galleries everywhere, lots of statues. And I loved Armenia. Food was amazing. Dead cheap, relatively speaking. I was judging wine for the Concours Mondial Bruxelles, give them which is the wine competition. And we had a couple of flights of Armenian wines, and they were good. Moldovan wines were really good. And I had Georgian wines. So my next wine is the other wine I brought is from Georgia. Mm. But look, these are really old wine regions. Now, this region, they would have made more brandy, I think, up until recently. But a lot of expats have flown in. Zora is actually made by an Italian expat who's come in and invested. Now, it's the only Armenian wine in Ireland. He is very much aiming at a more premium level. But I think it's delicious and something genuinely different.
The label, is that... there's kind of characters
that
underneath.
Is the Armenian language.
Ah, is
they
it?
They have their own language and alphabet.
Oh, because it looks Greek, I suppose.
I said that.
They have 42 letters in their alphabet or something.
Oh, my word. Okay.
For different... and they love their manuscripts. So we got a tour of the Manuscript Museum, which is... And in fact, if you go to the Chester Beatty Library before it closes with the EU presidency, they've loads of Armenian manuscripts there. I know this because an Armenian I met there had been to Dublin and couldn't believe how many Armenian manuscripts we had in Dublin.
Huh.
I didn't know this beforehand. The bloke who invented their language is hugely important. There's big statues to him everywhere, a big museum dedicated to him. And I say Armenians were great. I loved everyone I met. Randomly coming back late to my hotel about 1 a.m, suddenly a bunch of about 6 or 7 lads, all quite well dressed, but all suddenly wanted to talk to me, and they wanted to shake my hands and welcome me to Armenia.
Oh, wow.
It was just a group of drunk lads.
You're a foreigner, welcome to Armenia.
Just in case any tourists are listening, if that happens in Dublin, it's probably not the same thing.
And run if it happens in. They haven't mentioned
That's extraordinary. That's probably the only Armenian wine you can get.
Yeah, there
here.
Is a white version. Vashkahat is the other, and Vaski it's called, and you will find that around. The problem is because a lot of them are new wineries, recently developed and recently funded. Mm. And I visited a number of wineries, and they were all quite new. That's expensive to set up a winery. So they're having to charge money. So their neighbours, like in Georgia and Moldova, well, Moldova's not really a neighbour, but it's a similar ex-Soviet state making decent, interesting wines that we forget about. It's much harder, easier for them because they have long established wineries that were going and were able to upgrade their facility rather than build a brand new one. A lot of the Armenians have had to build brand new estates, brand new wineries. Stainless steel equipment can cost you a few hundred thousand. I mean, it is going to be expensive in Ireland as a result of the fact that it's just their new wine.
Are they exporting much of their wine?
They're trying to export, it's big in Germany and there's Armenian communities all over the world, huge numbers in LA. They're a bit like the Irish in that they literally emigrated everywhere because they've been kind of assailed on all sides. You know, they have not had a lucky time. I mean, their sacred mountain is Mount Ararat, where Noah and the lads landed. But that's in Turkey. But every time we pass it on the bus, the driver would say, look, look, look at the window, look, there is Mount Ararat and its sister mountain. And they like, it was quite sweet the way they and look, we talked about the Armenian genocide a lot, as we should, you know. But I want to go back on holidays. I loved it. That was great. Food was great. They have this lavash bread, which they bake in a tandoor. It's really thin and a bit like Lebanese bread, if you see. You know, yeah, but lighter and fresher, I felt. And designed to be eaten straight.
I love that.
And,
like, I've had Lebanese bread before. Yeah. Like that.
Oh, but Lebanese bread, well, gorgeous, Lebanon too would be made fresh. But usually here you can't get it made fresh from your tandoor. But wherever we were, you know, usually there was somebody with a tandoor making fresh bread at some of these wineries.
Yeah.
Lots of grilled meat, like roast pork and things like this, but lamb as well, and lots of herbs and loads of fruit and vegetables. Like, as a gift in our little bag when we arrived, as long as the map and whatever, we were given a little box of Armenian dried apricots and things. Really good, like the best dried. Yeah.
And so the food be, it sounds like it's Turkish, Greek, kind of.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking to some Turkish people on the trip. They were saying, yeah, a lot of this is very familiar, you know.
Yeah.
But with a slightly more Eastern Turkey edge to it, you know, because that's where they are.
Yeah.
But no, look, it was great. It's only a small country. It's only like, it's like, I think it's 29,000 square kilometres, and I think Munster is about 25. So, like, it's only
God,
bigger than
small.
Munster.
Yeah.
But they gradually had, and it's mountainy. So this is from 1,400 metres above sea level. So that means, which is good for grapes, because they get decent sunshine. They don't get much rain, actually. And so I like the lightness of touch on this. This is also, by the way, aged in amphora. And I just mentioned briefly, it says in the front, Karasi is the name of the wine. That weird language is trying to spell out Karasi. And that means from amphora, which is the old ancient amphora, which they bury in the ground and so on. So
can you fly directly there?
Yeah, and so I flew to Istanbul and then Istanbul. And there's a lot of flights in from there. So it mentioned a couple of places it's available. Sort of good independence. 64 Wine has it. I think Bradley's down in Cork has it. Sort of good independence is where you'll find it.
Yeah, but it's really Zora you're looking for.
Yeah, Zora. But Google it. Honestly, it's the only Zora, I suspect.
It's all
It's under the Z's. Indeed. It's absolutely delicious, must say. Yeah, and as I understand it, you're taking up a new job with the Albanian tourist board.
Armenian,
sorry, I should say. Yeah, sorry. We were talking about Albania before. In the last hour, actually, because
Albania's interesting too, actually.
Well, the Trumps just bought a big chunk of it, and no one's that happy about it under perhaps dubious circumstances. Which movie would you like to do first?
Disclosure Day, I guess.
Okay, Disclosure Day coming up after this.
We're interrupting our coverage.
It's unclear if this is an official government disclosure.
Here.
This will upend all established order across the entire world.
This is Disclosure Day.
It sounded very BBC when he said that, didn't it? Established the established order. Right, first off, when everyone from those few critics before were all going, Emily Blunt, Oscar. Yes? No?
I don't know. I don't know. Genuinely, I don't know. She was very good in it. I will say that. She, like Emily Blunt, I think she's a very, very talented actress. I think when she does interesting work, she can bring out something very, very unique. I would say when I was watching this, though, part of me was kind of thinking, they could have got Jennifer Lawrence to do this. They could have got somebody else to do it. I don't know if she was necessarily bringing something terribly unique to it, right?
Okay.
But also as well, what's going on in this is that most of the film, I would say like 70% of the film, just to do the plot.
Yeah, premise,
so,
yeah.
Emily Blunt is a TV meteorologist, and one day she suddenly sees a bird and is able to speak Russian and then is unable to speak Korean and suddenly is imbued with this massive power that she's able to understand and empathize with everyone. And all while this is happening, Josh O'Connor plays this cybersecurity expert. He has stolen this 70-year archive of footage and documents and everything, incontrovertible proof that aliens exist and that the US government, through this private company called Ward X that's run by Colin Firth and Colman Domingo, have been keeping it and have been suppressing it for years, and they've been using alien technology to block the release of it and blah 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 blah.
Okay.
So the film essentially spends 70% of the time waiting for Josh O'Connor and Emily Blunt to intersect with one another, and then when they do finally, they realise
realise that it actually turns out that, and I don't think I'm spoiling this, but that they are connected in ways that they don't realise that may or may not pertain to alien life.
Okay.
Now, when we think of Steven Spielberg, we think of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. We think of E.T. Mm. We think of War of the Worlds. He does have a bit of a predilection towards aliens and this idea that, you know, like when he made, you know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, it was 1977. There was still the belief that like aliens are something to be feared and something like that. And there's a brilliant, there is a fantastic interview of him on Inside the Actor's Studio when he talks to James Lipton. And James Lipton, who was the host, and he says, you know, your mother was a concert pianist and a musician and your father was a computer programmer. When the aliens meet in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, how do they communicate with each other? And you can see Spielberg have this, like, you know, the veil has been lifted. He realizes that in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, even though he did, and he says it, he's like, wouldn't it be great if I actually thought of that? I didn't think of that now until you just said it.
Yeah.
It was about him trying to process the idea of people being separated and then brought together.
Mm.
And that Close Encounters of the Third Kind, if you look at it, it's really a metaphor for him trying to deal with his parents' divorce.
Mm.
So bring that forward to Disclosure Day, and he's still on that track of like, you know, people have been separated and, you know, we're all divided. And like the film opens in this wrestling match and it's a very kind of Trump coded rally thing. And, you know, the film constantly talks about how, you know, once this is out there, people will believe and, you know, it will change how we view religion and it will change how we view each other and we will no longer be alone in the universe and stuff like that. And I personally found that so naive. Really, like, I want to, like, not to quote the X-Files, I want to believe that this would do it, but God, I mean, in the last 20 years, do we genuinely think that something as groundbreaking and changing, would aliens really change our fundamental human nature?
Well, the E.T. view of aliens and the Close Encounters view of aliens ultimately was very optimistic.
Very, very optimistic. And look, it's Spielberg.
Yeah.
Like, he is not going to be doing some paranoid conspiracy thriller kind of vibe. That's not his style. He's always earnest. He's always sentimental. And I would say that's almost what kind of keeps me from hating this film, is because it's so earnest. It's because it has such kind of childlike wonder about it and it wants to believe in the very best of people. And you feel that watching it.
Mm.
But at the same time,
the difference between now and then that we can't, it's less easy to believe that now.
Exactly. This is the thing. And this is the thing that really bugged me about this film, is that he had the perfect opportunity to talk about how we no longer trust things. He could have talked about AI and how it's warping our brains. He could have talked about short form content and social media and how we no longer have the attention spans anymore. He could have talked about how politicians are using, you know, strong rhetoric and, you know, all this to kind of separate us and stuff like that. And he doesn't. He uses none of that. Instead, you know, he has like great set pieces in it. There's a whole thing where he gets hit by there's a part of it where he gets chased by or gets hit by a train. And, you know, there's great stunt work in it. And you can see he has these brilliant runners, which is like where the camera starts and runs for like a minute and a half and stuff. He has all these great craft moments of craft, but there isn't, until the last 20 minutes, I find, there isn't the kind of the crescendo, you know, that kind of way. It's building up to something and then it gets there and then just end credits. And you're like, you're blue balling me. You're edging me, Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
What was it? What did the aliens say? What were they talking about? What was it? And you don't get it. Like, and I know that's kind of spoiling it for people, but like, I walked away from this so frustrated, so hoping for something. I mean, look, as you said, we were talking off air, Spielberg is kind of hoisted by his own petard. Like, he is so well known. He is so front and center with the promotion for this. I mean, he has been out selling this film. Any podcast in the US, he was on it talking about this film and stuff. But you watch it and you can feel that it is one of his lesser works. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you compare it to something like, you know, Minority Report or even The Fabelmans. He has the ability to do it, but this, I think, I don't know, it didn't connect. And I was willing it to be better. I was willing it to get me in some way, shape and form. And it just never did.
Eve Houston's in it, isn't she?
Eve Houston is in it, yeah. She plays Josh O'Connor's love interest in it. And again, this is another thing. They could have caught her out of it. Not, nothing against her. They could have caught her out of it. They could have caught Wyatt Russell out of it, who plays Emily Blunt's love interest. Could have caught them out of it, and it probably would have been a better film. I mean, if there is a 90-minute version of this film that is better, but this, I mean, I struggled with this. I wanted it to be good. I so wanted it to be good.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, God.
I know. Like, look, I mean... Look, he's 78. He's clearly still very spry. I would imagine he's got another film in him somewhere along the way. I'm sure he's probably working on something. I don't think this is going to be his last film. I certainly hope it isn't. But this felt like, you know, look, 30 years ago, this might have been a cracker. This might have been, you know, we would be talking about this probably in the same breath as Minority Report and stuff like that. But now in our current climate, in the current context that this film exists, it feels almost irresponsible that it ignores the current state of the world and the current state of the US specifically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, that's a layup. That's an open goal. Hit it, Spielberg. Do it. Like,
yeah. But so what kind of US does it depict? Is it like everything's normal kind of US?
No. See, this is it. Like, I mean, they go into, there's a whole kind of thing of like the news screens are talking about World War III is about to happen and stuff like that. But there is no kind of, you know, obviously Trump isn't mentioned, but it's kind of coded in there a little bit and stuff like that. There's nothing, like, there's barely any mention of AI. There's one moment where someone goes, is this AI? And it's like, nope, it isn't. And it's like, what? Like, this is such a AI I'm talking about now, is such a shadow over everything in the film industry, in news. You talk to journalists, they're all terrified. And here's a perfect example, here's a perfect opportunity to talk about something that has been, you know, widely debunked in places. Like, I mean, this whole thing in this, there's a scene in this when Josh O'Connor is out in a field and suddenly, and it's in the trailer, I'm not giving this away, crop circles suddenly appear.
Yeah.
Crop circles were debunked in the 90s. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were debunked in the 90s, and yet Spielberg throws them in there. And I go, okay, I get it. Maybe it's just a kind of, it's a familiar iconography for people that, you know, crop circles, aliens, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, Jesus, like 30 years ago, we knew this wasn't real. And you're putting this in there as if it's, you know, this big revealing moment. And you're like, what? I don't know. I found this so frustrating.
Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah, sorry. I know, I wanted this to be good. God, yeah, I wanted
wait
this to
hear about Scary Movie now.
Somebody says, I lived in America for over 20 years. Believe me, a lot of people there would lose their minds if Disclosure Day happened. I've met many people who believe the Earth is 6,000 years old and humans and dinosaurs coexisted. Aliens would definitely upend their lives, especially where God and religion is concerned. Don't they, is God... You know,
oh, no, yeah, that's a big thing in it. Yeah, like Eve Houston's character is a former nun and stuff like that. And again, okay, I appreciate the intellectual discussion where it's like, you know, Christianity believes that, you know, humans were God's greatest creation on Earth. And it's like, okay, but did God create aliens then? And they do kind of like spend a little bit of time with that, ruminating on the bit. I like that. I mean, you know, this film could have been brilliant if they had set it after Disclosure Day. And what I mean by that is we have now got incontrovertible proof that they're aliens. What does that world look like? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That would be interesting. Like Pluribus. Like, look at Pluribus. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Like, there's a TV show, a really smart, interesting TV show. Aliens have landed on Earth. What does that look like? And it's terrifying. And it's, okay, if they, but it's terrifying, but then it's also very kind of positive as well. So it's like,
well, it's weird. It's actually, that's the weird thing about Pluribus. It gives you mixed feelings about the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying to you. Like, the ambiguity of it. Like, that's what makes Pluribus so good. And, you know, Spielberg could have made something like that. It's like, what would it be like if all humanity came together?
Could you say, are there parts of the film, or, you know, if you ignored all of that, is it entertaining?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is entertaining. I will say that. It is entertaining. I mean, look, maybe I went into this with far too high expectations for it, and I was crushed by the weight of my own expectations. I don't know. There are entertaining set pieces in it. Parts of it are very, very well made. But then there are parts where it's like, why are we spending 10 minutes on this? Like, Jesus. fucking kick on there, right? I don't need a 5 minute joke about, oh, we need to dump our phones. Like, they spent 5 minutes doing this joke about Wyatt Russell's character won't drive over Emily Blunt's phone because it's very expensive. That's like, who gives a
Yeah. Okay. All right. We do have to take a commercial break, during which time we will try to reinflate Brian Lloyd. Back in a couple of minutes. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. We're still only halfway through Movies and Booze. Leslie Williams, Fionnuala Jones are still with us. Brian's weeping in a corner about Disclosure Day.
I just wish it was better. All right.
Yeah. Right. Now, so Tom Hanks says, because there's going to be a category for voiceovers now in the Oscars, Fionnuala. And Tom Hanks says there shouldn't be one.
He is not interested in that, no. He says they should be considered in the main acting categories because essentially he has a big long quote on Gold Derby about it, because obviously he's out promoting Toy Story 5. He thinks the Oscars has enough categories, and, you know, if a performance moves you, then, like, why would it be categorized in a different category? Mm. Now, I don't disagree with that. Are they also not two completely different? Could you also not argue that they are two completely different
performances?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
because
yes,
one's just a voice performance.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that as if to be this is the VO artists are coming in their droves, as well as all the Steven Spielberg fans of the studio. you know what I mean? But the reason why they're separate is because they are different.
Okay, you would talk to, like, I've interviewed VO, not to be, whatever. Name drop. I've interviewed a lot of VO artists over the years, and they will tell you that, like, their performance in their mind in the interior, it's exactly the same as if we're doing it on stage.
Yeah.
There's no difference. The only thing of it is that they're wearing comfortable clothes and they're in a lovely, warm recording suit. Mm. So the interiority of it, if that's a word, VO artists would say there's no difference. Like Andrew Rannells from Thing, like, he was a big VO artist for years. He was a guy who was on Girls and Stuff. He talks about it, like, he directed some of them, like, and I was using my college training to act out the scene with people and stuff like that. Like, what I think is the problem, believe it or believe it not, is that VO artists and VO actors don't get the same recognition. That's very true.
Mm. Yeah,
they do not. They are, like...
Or pay, I would imagine.
Or pay the... Oh, yes, yeah. Actually. Yeah. They're not even paid half the amount. Yeah. And, like, you know, you have this whole thing now where it's like you've got to get a celebrity voice to do, you know, Woody and thing. And, like, fair enough. But, like, there are an entire subsection, and I hate using the word subsection, but there's an entire troupe of actors out there who do voiceover work, who are just as talented, if not more talented in some cases, than some of these celebrity actors that they come in to do voices.
Yeah.
You know
what's
funny, though? For some of the Toy Story, like, spin-off stuff, Tom Hanks just got his brother to do the games and, like, some of the toys, which the brother is obviously delighted about. But, like, I'm like, you're so into voice actors, but, like, you won't do Toy Story Escape to whatever on PlayStation 5. You know what I mean?
It's
you're
ridiculous.
Too busy for that, Tom.
Like, yeah,
maybe they can't afford them for...
That's probably it. Yeah,
that's probably it, yeah.
No, we're throwing. Now, let's move on to our second wine. Anyway,
okay,
Leslie.
So, second wine is Pheasant's Tears.
Great name.
Yes, Pheasant's, and the reason is because we think that pheasants come from Georgia.
Really?
That's a claim, anyway.
Okay.
And the Latin name for pheasant refers to an older name of Georgia, basically. Mm. So, of child something.
Interesting.
Anyway, so this is from a long-established estate. Again, Georgia, Armenia would have been making wine around the same time. They haven't found any sites as old as the Armenian one, but similarly, a longer tradition, in fact, it was quite funny. On the trip, right, I was, after some of the talks from our, you know, little bus tour guide, we'd get all this stuff about Armenian wine and whatever, and then I would ask the Georgians on the bus, there was loads of Georgians because they were nearby, lots of them came over, is there how many lies there? Oh, it's all lies! We're older. Armenia's slogan is the newest, oldest wine country. We're the oldest wine country. And look, they're probably right in that they have a longer tradition. And a lot of the wineries in Georgia are very, very old. Pheasant's Tears would be probably the best known one. There's a Kakheti that they make as well as this. So the grape in this is Saparavi. That's their best known grape.
Saparavi. Is it a peculiar thing that a lot of the grapes they use, you don't find them anywhere else?
Pretty much,
yeah.
And there's like 500 individual Georgian grapes. I reckon there's 300 Armenian ones, not found. found anywhere else.
Wow.
Now, not all of them are being cultivated. Some of them are just like samples, or they're, you know, in mixed vineyards where you've got a whole field plot of different vines. But some, they're like this producer in particular, are trying to revive some of the older vines and see if they can make viable ones. But Saperavi is the most interesting grape that they have by far. Arkitsvili is their white, that you, if you want to. The Georgian words are hard to pronounce, but actually you just pronounce every letter. So Kvervi is spelled Q-V-E-R-V-I, but you just say Kvervi, which is kind of every word.
Okay.
Loads of Georgian wines in Ireland. This is a good example. They're often known as black wines because they're really darkly flavoured, really quite concentrated. Honestly, I think they can be really, really interesting. Really black.
I must say that when I took the first sip, I was
what the hell is that?
It's very Brittany Broski kombucha meme going back in for it, but it's like, I'm getting a charcuterie taste off it.
Yeah, and
it,
the second sip, I love this.
Yeah.
Smoky.
I think that it is smoky. I mean, that's why I went with this one second, because the one was a lot, was the Zora was lighter.
No, I'm fine. I'm
just a couple of places quickly. Bradley's Cork, Just Divine, Neighbourhood Wines, Grain Store, Ballymaloe, Latitude in Cork. That's a wine bar you can drink it in. In fact, Martin's Off Lights and 64 Wine Sweeney's.
Okay.
So, and lots of Georgian wines around. Ask in your local shop. They will have Georgian wines. Yeah.
So fabulous. Now, Only Murders in the Building is like, has a load of Brits in it for the next season. Are they actually making it?
A load of Brits. Yeah, it's in production in the UK as we speak.
Oh, and so I think they moved the building as well.
Yeah. Still a show that I have not watched, I'll be honest.
Jesus, I'm surprised. I thought you'd like it.
I'll get to it eventually. The list is too long. So they're in the UK for this and joining Jennifer Saunders, who had been announced previously.
She's
and obviously
cool.
the usual suspects, Selena, Martin, etc., etc. We have Martin Freeman joining the cast. Jamie Demetrio, Anjana Vassen, Jane Horrocks, Derek Jacoby, and Leslie Nicol. So big fat cast of Brits. So
yeah,
very
exciting. So but the story actually takes place in Britain.
Yeah.
This time
they've moved.
Okay.
Meryl's back, I'm pretty sure as well. Divine Joy Randolph.
Like, so.
Yeah. So
yeah. Okay.
Very
right.
Scary. Seems to be the show that people want to be in.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Jennifer Saunders would be great in that.
I
watch her in anything. Like.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Anyway, time for shy retiring Brian Lloyd to try and force himself to have an opinion on our next movie. It is a scary movie. Here's a clip.
We heard tell of a Halloween party. If you just invite us in.
Why you need an invitation? White folks show up to parties uninvited all the time with their little nasty ass casseroles. Why she got them dirty ass white girl feet?
Look like you was walking around porn sets all day. Got them trailer park toes. Jesus!
There you go. They liked it in the box there. They thought it was hilarious, that day.
Yeah. All right.
Okay,
is there a gas leak in there?
Yeah. No, it's been a long and hard day.
All right. So this is the sixth scary movie. Right?
Okay.
Now, the scary movie franchise has made, and this is how I know God is dead and has left this realm. The scary movie franchise has made 1.02 billion. Right.
Wow. And, you know, Steven Spielberg could have addressed that as well. Yeah.
He could have, like, why he failed to address the scary movie franchise. Made 1.02 billion over six films, right? At a cost of like 202 million, right?
Okay.
So, okay, fine. Yes, they have an audience. These films are critic proof. It doesn't matter a jot what I say about this film. Like, Scary Movie 5 got 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. Last time I checked, I think this is like a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, full disclosure, I was at the premiere of it. People were laughing. People laugh at this. I have no.
Hang on. Was it before or after you'd seen Disclosure Day? Maybe you were in a bad mood.
Before. Now, I want to say this. I want this on record on national radio.
Okay.
I love a parody movie. I am not above laughing at stupid stuff. Jackass Forever was one of my favorite films the year it was released. Okay. Blazing Saddles, Airplane, Top Secret. Even go more recently with, you know, the recent remake with Liam Neeson and Naked Gun.
Naked Gun.
Yeah, too many guns. I love parody films. I think they're fantastic. Blazing Saddles is a film that I can quote from start to finish. I love it so much. Same goes for Airplane as well. What I hate about scary movies as a franchise, and particularly in this one, you can tell they hate.
you can actually tell they hate horror movies. And that the way that they kind of take the mick out of them is to actually make fun of them. Because when you go back and look at Young Frankenstein, right? Mm. Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. Great movie. Come on, Frankenstein. Yeah, this is it. Like, God, I love that film. Yeah. You could tell that Mel Brooks actually loved, you know, German expressionist horror and stuff like that. You could tell that he cared about it. He loved it enough to take the mick out of it. Same goes for something like Shrek as an example. Shrek, you would call as a parody film.
Yeah, yeah.
You could tell that they all loved fantasy films and saw all the rest of it. And that they were using that love to kind of take the mick out of it and stuff like that. But when you watch Scary Movie, and particularly when you watch Scary Movie 6, you can tell they just hate these films. Like, they'll make a joke about the substance with Demi Moore, and then they'll make a joke about Long Legs and what have you, and then they'll crack a joke about the Epstein Files, because of course
there's a character called Tuesday, which is a very
by the way this is made by Paramount Studios, right? And if you recall, the one before that had Jenna Ortega and Melissa Barrera. Melissa Barrera spoke out against what the Israeli army was doing.
Scream film.
And she basically got fired from the Scream movies and stuff like that. And Jenna Ortega was like, well, I'm not doing it if she's doing it. And the last Scream movie basically had to be cobbled together right quick, because the entire cast effectively walked because of how Paramount treated Melissa Barrera as a result of her standing up for Palestine. And then in this film, which is a Paramount film, they make a real big point of making fun of Tuesday, Jenna Ortega. Well, it's a micktake of Wednesday. With Jenna Ortega and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's a very mean-spirited film. And okay, fine. Some people went to see it and they laughed and, you know, enjoy it, God bless. I watched this and I just walked out of it even more angry. This film did nothing for me. I think I laughed maybe once when there was a joke about White Chicks, the Marlon Wayans White Chicks film. I think that was the only time I laughed. And this film was like 100 minutes long. And like, I swear to God, I am always, people think I go into these films angry and like I'm trying to rip them apart. I go in hoping for a good time.
Yeah.
And both times I was let down.
Let me ask you a question.
Please.
No, you're supposed to say what?
Oh, what?
It's an interrogative statement, but that's not important. Thanks to Leslie Brown and Fionnuala. That's our lot for today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.